Good morning.
Yeah, it's still morning.
Ladies and gentlemen here in Dawa Studios. This is my second episode of my podcast called Courage Over Comfort. Everyone has a story worth telling.
Right.
And I'm here with my good friend, Martha Smith.
Yes.
I'm so grateful to have you here
today.
Thank you.
Grateful you asked me.
Yeah.
I love being involved in your life. Yeah.
You know what? I think that's the most amazing part. I'm grateful that you're involved in my life.
I just love your stories because they parallel, even though our age is so different.
Yeah.
We have probably 30 years in between us here.
Yeah.
That stuff you talk about is parallels, and I just get so much from hearing your stories and how you overcome some things or how you trudge through stuff, and it helps me a lot. So.
Yeah. And honestly, that's the beauty of life to me. You know, as we were talking a little bit earlier, we were talking about your relationship with you and your son,
mm-hmm.
Matthew. And I think one of the things that I can connect it to is my relationship with Lola. And I learn just as much from her as she learns from me.
Yes, yeah.
And tapping into other spaces in my life. And so when I hear that, with you and Matthew, and then the connection that you and I can have, I'm really grateful for the experience. And
yeah,
you can
I don't
find
see an age difference at all. I feel very much alongside of you. I try not to get age or gender or anything in between. Just see you as a person. What makes you tick?
Yeah.
I had the best seat in the house of being a school counselor, listening to students and their hearts and their deep thoughts. And
yeah.
Sometimes I think I got more out of it than what they did. So yeah,
and that's the beauty,
yeah,
right?
It was
that's
really,
the beauty of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. So I get a lot out of us. So
yeah,
yeah. So let's bring up that mountain idea. Yeah, because whenever I think of you, and you know, you're always running, and then you just I hate running uphill. I hate those mountains.
Yeah.
How do you see?
See how I see mountains? Well, mountains, and I just said it earlier. Mountains scare me. There's a fear that comes with it because, and what it really comes down to is it's work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a lot of things in life, there are some things that are easier and there's some things that are harder. And for me, it's one of the hardest things I have to do, but it's also one of the most rewarding things that I have to do. But I'm in this phase of my life where I'm being honest with myself, like just being brutally honest with myself and then accepting that. And I don't know if I've shared this story before. When I was younger, I wasn't as disciplined and I wasn't as consistent as I would like to have been.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to school, I went to a school called North Central College in...
Where is that?
That's in Naperville, Illinois. It was a Division III school.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that the coach would make us do was run up these hills. And the hill it wasn't that bad of a hill looking at it now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, it was like climbing Mount Everest. And I didn't want anything to do with it. And I have this running joke that I say,
okay,
I didn't leave school because of that hill, but I left school because of that hill. I was only there for a semester.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
I was only
symbolic.
There
for, That's
yeah,
very,
very symbolic.
Symbolic.
Yes. And what happened was it's always stuck in the back of my head for whatever reason. It's always like I always remember that. And it was that thing, that nagging feeling. And so now the things that I'm doing now surprises me. Like you wouldn't, I mean, this is 30 years ago. And it was what I realized, it was like God telling me that the places that you run away from or the places you fear is where you need to be to grow and to get to the places that you are. And so, yes, I do fear them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not lying about it or not moving away from that thought.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just approaching it. And it makes me feel accomplished anytime I do it.
Yeah, because that I know about you, because you do it anyway.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I kind of thought, well, there's a difference between how I see mountains.
Okay, I'd love to hear
that. So, yeah. So when people ask me about some of the things about my past, I'm going to get a little emotional here.
Okay.
It's like I have to go up and down and up and down into the valleys, over some mountains, down another valley,
yeah.
over another mountain to go ahead and grab those stories. Because of my age, I've moved so far in years away from those stories. Yeah. And I have plenty of stories currently that I could talk about. Mm-hmm. But for me, they're a protection.
Yeah.
They you know, after doing a lot of forgiving and a lot of counseling and a lot of letting go with 12-step programs,
yeah.
That for me, they represent that they're protecting those things and that I don't need to have those run the show in my life anymore.
Wow.
I don't need to go, well, if this didn't happen back then and it's my parents' fault and whatever,
yeah.
you know, I don't do that stuff. I went through those angry periods
yeah.
For sure and then left them and they came back out again. But for me, I think just with time and all the work I do
yeah.
to keep trying to transform myself.
Yeah.
I told my son I never want to stop trying. And he
yeah.
says, Mom, that much I know about you. You always are trying something. And to transform my thinking and so forth and to become the person I need to be. But, yeah, and so I have to really go way, way out. And it's like telling a story about someone else now.
That is very interesting.
Yeah, so I don't have much emotion when I tell them.
Yeah.
And that stopped a long time ago. But for me, the mountains are a protection.
What do you mean you don't have as much emotion when you tell them? Like, what is that? You mean like having a conversation with someone else and being able to have the conversation on a level where you're not like
triggered? Yeah, I'm not deadpan and I'm
okay.
not shutting off. I don't shut it off.
Yeah.
And I try not to watch it like a movie,
yeah.
you know, play it over again.
Over and over.
Because that doesn't do me any good, and I need to, like you, move forward, put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
And we were talking the other day about sometimes I didn't plan, but my body did it anyway. I didn't want to go to a funeral with one of my neighbors, and
yeah.
I thought to myself, why did I offer myself to do this? Her two sons would have taken her. What
yeah.
am I doing trying to be this for everybody? Let me, you know, go with you during your time of remorse and so forth. And I thought, why am I doing that? I don't need to fix or put myself out there all the time as let me be the good friend for you and whatever.
Yeah.
And she wasn't there for me. I mean, not that I'm comparing. She wasn't there for me when my husband passed.
Yeah.
She didn't call me. She, you know, and I had to challenge her. I said, you know, you never even, you know, called me or, you know, and
yeah.
she apologized and so forth. But it wasn't about that. It was
mm-hmm.
about me feeling like I need to be there for everybody.
Yeah.
So, I thought, well, I have a good excuse to get out of it. I had an ant infestation in my apartment, and so I had a great excuse. And so I was, you know, fighting myself, going to sleep that night, and then fighting myself in the morning. And just my body took over. I got in the shower. I didn't know what I was going to do, whether I was going to pick up the phone and call her
yeah.
and say, I'm not coming with you. And then I thought, you know, I'm just God, you know, lead me into. And my body just went on without me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I ended up going with her, and I had a good time, enjoyed being around her son. I knew the person that had passed away.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, you know, keep
Here
me
I
from
am.
Getting in my way so much. But
yeah.
it did wake me up to be being more cautious about deciding what I'm going to put myself out to do, because I need the time to fix myself.
Exactly.
Clean up my side of the street.
No.
So. Yeah, I'm really taking a look at not, you know, doing that so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, something you said made me think about people pleasing.
Mm-hmm. That's what it was. Thank
yeah.
you for defining that.
No, no.
Yeah.
And
that's what it was.
It was. And I, for a long time in my life, that's what I did personally. And trying to be there for someone, but there was this always an expectation of them. Expectation to get something
yeah,
from
you're
that.
Such a nice guy.
Yeah, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But what I needed to do is figure out what unconditional love was.
Mm.
And ultimately, just do that.
Okay, I hadn't thought about it in terms like that.
And what I mean by that, so I was having a conversation actually with my therapist earlier today, and I was telling her about this race that I just did over the weekend, or where I was pacing a friend of mine. And in a lot of sense, I ask myself now, why am I doing this in this moment? Am I trying to expect something from it? Am I getting something from it? And if I feel that that's the case, then I have to check myself.
It's good that you stop and ask yourself questions, because
you have to.
You have to.
For me, I didn't do that. I didn't do that for a long time. And so I had a moment where I could be there for someone and I received nothing from it. And there's a joy for me internally that happens when I can do that.
Where it's free of all that.
Where it's free of all the agenda, wanting something, needing something.
Yeah.
And I think the beauty of that for me is people can see that and receive that, because I think we're instinctive as human beings.
I think they can pick up when
they
can. People pleasing. Yeah. Especially, we're not stupid. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Especially with women.
Yeah.
Women are amazing.
Yeah, we have those antenna. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so that was something that was, you know, as you were explaining that, mm-hmm. that I understood. Now, I'm going to ask you this question. Do you remember how you and I met?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I needed you to move me, for one thing.
Yeah.
And I'd met you through Bible study and through your parents-in-law.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the actual first
time. The first time for me, we were in Bible study.
Okay.
We were just in Bible study.
Okay, at the library.
And in the library. Okay. And we're just talking.
All right.
We would talk a little bit just...
To the group.
Yeah, to the group.
Yeah, right.
Yes, but I think it was the first time.
Okay, I would think so.
I didn't even realize that.
I would think that it had to be then. Yeah.
And then
I realized you were related to my good friends that I was making friends with. Yeah.
And it's so interesting, especially that Bible study that I'm so grateful for. And I'll tell you my parts of it. I was just new into faith. This was about two years ago, a little bit over two years ago.
Yeah, we've been doing it.
I was really new
into
faith. And my in-laws had moved out of my ex-in-laws, I guess now. It's weird to call them my ex-in-laws, so I just call them my in-laws.
Yeah, call them your in-laws, yeah.
They had moved out of the house, and they were very, very important into my faith journey, like very important. And so they invited me.
They are to mine also.
Yes, absolutely. And they invited me to the Bible study. And the first thought I thought was, no, I'm not doing it. Like, it's so funny where it came from, where my headspace was initially mm-hmm. to where it came from. And I couldn't imagine not being able to have the connection with you.
Oh, wow. Well,
and that's a really...
Well, I so wanted Matthew to meet you, my son to meet you.
Yes, I remember.
And I definitely, we had to do breakfast, we had to do something, because the first time it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And then I got to have him meet you, yeah.
Can I tell you something about that, honestly?
Yeah, you wanted to before.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you something about that. I knew you were, and I'll just say it from my point of view. I thought you was a little bit bothered that we didn't get to meet the first time.
I was.
And I understood why. But I'll tell you, this is just kind of how I lead my life. I said, we're going to meet when we're supposed to meet.
Okay.
I knew that already.
I was so disappointed.
Yeah. And why I say that is because I always say life is lifing. And it won't always go the way we want it to go.
I know.
And so I said, when the time was right, we were going to meet. And I think now having the hindsight that we met exactly when we were supposed to meet.
Well, and my goal was when he came that time as I'm getting older, I want him to be assured that I am hanging around some good people.
Yeah.
And he knows I always pick good people.
Yeah.
But I wanted him to actually, in case something happened, that he knows he can, there's Ron, there's Jerry, there's Harold, there's Julia, there's Herman, that he could actually pull them in if he needed
anything.
And I knew that you would be a good person to stand beside him on some things. And so I had kind of an agenda there. And when it wasn't going to happen, I'm thinking, okay, well, that goal went out the window. And but then it did come around.
It did really come around.
And at the best time, probably.
And at the best time.
Yeah.
And I've told you this privately. Our time, me and Matt's time, is I think that you, it's, how do I say this? You had a certain idea of what that relationship would be in terms of what you just said.
Right.
But I truly believe that I'm going to be working with Matt in an even different capacity later on. And it was so funny because I didn't go into that expecting that. And as I was talking to him and as he was expressing his story, I said, oh, wait, I'm going to know this guy.
You had told me that. Yeah, I was really surprised.
On a, on a different level.
It wasn't about me anymore.
No, it wasn't. No. And it was partly about you.
Yeah.
But it's like, I find like God puts people together in this really interesting way. And we may look at it, and it's just life. We'll look at it on a very surface level, but there's so much depth into it. So I'm always, in this phase of my life, I'm always looking for the depth.
Well, and you're giving into that. The stories that you tell me when you're out running and meeting people, and then this comes this way and you just let it be, and then it ends up being, you know, three times more important. It's just amazing how you just let it go and then it becomes just so much more.
Yeah.
The people that you meet.
Yeah. It's
and really, I love hearing the stories. It really boons me up to hear how you are connecting with people out there, and that you're not just holding yourself so tight.
Yeah, I think I did that a lot in my life, and so
well, we all do. Different. Yeah,
but this podcast is about you.
Okay,
and so I'd love to hear a little bit of your story. I do know that you're from
Detroit, Motown music. Grew up with Motown music. Saw so many of them in person.
Yeah,
I was like to brag. I saw Stevie Wonder when he was 14 playing the harmonica. He wasn't singing for Motown yet, and I was 12, and he was playing Fingertips Part One and Part Two, and I was playing harmonica at 8.
Wow.
So, yeah, and so then it spurred me on to learn a little bit more of harmonica, and which I do now. I play harmonica by ear.
You do?
Oh, yeah, I perform at karaoke. Oh, yeah, I play some blues and jazz and spiritual music. No, I have 25 harmonicas.
Really?
Yeah, my sister bought a lot of them for me. But, yeah, I was in a praise band for a while.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But so, yeah, lots of stories, leaving home as an emancipated 16-year-old, leaving an urban city. It was the fifth largest city at that time in 67.
Yeah.
And the pastor helping me to get away and become emancipated and out on my own and hit this little town just above Joplin, Missouri, Independence, Kansas, not Independence, Missouri, Independence, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And stayed there for 2 years and then eventually went on to Emporia to get my teaching degree.
Yeah.
And didn't have contact with my family for 9 years.
Yeah.
And so I became the breadwinner, taking control, you know.
Yeah.
It's not going to get done unless I do it. No one's around. They weren't even there for me at home. I was always the one to be seen and not heard. So a 12-year-old certainly can't have a deep thought, which is not true because counseling for so long, 55 plus years, mostly with middle school, 12-year-olds have deep thoughts. But and so the struggle was real. God met me at every corner.
Amen.
And got a job in 2 weeks. I always tell this story. Back then, the job application asked your religion. And so I was raised Lutheran, went to Lutheran school.
Yeah.
And put Lutheran down. Well, the manager of Foodtown there was the deacon for the Lutheran church. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, and so just I prayed to have good friends. I didn't want popular people.
Yeah.
No one knew me, and so I was very careful. I was asked out on a lot of dates. I refused because I didn't want to get into having to handle that also.
Yeah.
So slowly.
Now, how old are you at this time?
16.
Okay. Okay.
Going on 17.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that wasn't for me. But eventually, I did come around to eventually start dating in a little while, but I had to get my feet on the ground. And
okay.
Yeah. And so, rented a room for $25, and I always tell people what I bought to eat. So, yeah, I bought...
What?
And I lived on this way for almost a year. So, but I would buy a large box of Raisin Bran, milk, those Velveeta, great big Velveeta blocks, saltine crackers, and instant coffee.
Really? Mm-hmm. And you lived off of this for years?
Now, sometimes when I'd be working at Food Town, you know, those little Vienna sausage cans, they were like 10 cents yes. back then. Mm-hmm. I'd take a break and have those, yeah. And sometimes a soda or something.
Yeah,
yeah, I really had to watch my money. And then luckily a lot of my friends who were living there invited me over. So on Sundays, lots of times I'd get a nice dinner. Yeah. The lady I lived with sometimes would leave me a slice of pie or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway.
That's really interesting. What were you feeling? Mm. At that time, like, and what I mean by that is, you know, you've been emancipated from your family,
mm-hmm.
and you're going out, you're essentially going out on your own,
right? Not knowing anyone,
trying to figure out life,
not knowing anyone.
What were you feeling?
Well, I always take myself back to being on the plane. It was my first plane ride, of course.
Okay,
and I had to switch planes eventually to get there, Frontier Airlines. But I just felt God was with me, and he had something out there for me.
Yeah.
He kind of backs me up against a wall. Do I want to stay where I'm at, which was horrible. My mother was very abusive to both my sister and me.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to harm her.
You were?
Yeah. So, when I went to talk to the pastor about it, he said, oh, no, we need to get you out of there.
Yeah.
My mother was glad to have me gone, too, so... But yeah, being on that plane, I just felt so peaceful, knowing that anything was better than what I was leaving.
Where you're coming from, yeah.
And I was just ready and open to it, and it just appeared to me everywhere.
Yeah.
Had some wonderful teachers there. Made some good friends. Did a lot of bike riding with them.
Yeah.
A lot of them took me under their wing to just, you know, help me out and could make some good friendships.
Yeah.
And,
Now, how did all of this lead you into your career and the steps there?
Well, that started way back being Lutheran. So,
yeah.
Grew up. Born in 1949, grew up in the 50s.
Yeah.
Women didn't have many choices, so either you were going to be a nurse, a secretary, a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty much it.
Yeah.
And so I was always being in Lutheran school. Now, what are you going to grow up to be? My grandmother would say, a Lutheran school teacher, right? Yeah. But I loved all my teachers. They were good people. They were sane. I wanted my first grade teacher to be my mother. I thought, man, could I beg her, go over to her house and sit on her porch and beg her to take me in? I mean, something was wrong in first grade when I'm thinking that. But, they were good people, and I wanted to model myself after. So, yeah, I had a lot of good models in front of me, and I thought, you know what? I could see myself doing that.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much where it began.
That's amazing. You know, and what I find interesting in that is what you went through in from your past, you were able to help others.
Right. So then I eventually became a counselor and, listening to the hearts and souls of kids, turning in a lot of abuse cases.
Yeah.
Being really amazed how some students can still come to school. And I was surprised how my sister and I used to come to school.
Yeah.
We'd leave the house an hour early just to get gone before my mother got up.
Yeah.
But to understand that many of them, luckily I was never sexually abused, but dealing with students who have been and they still show up to school amazes me.
It's amazing.
Amazes me. Yeah. Or when there's older siblings bossing them around or taking their stuff and they come to school and have trouble learning.
Yeah.
I had trouble learning.
Yeah,
I had a lot of trouble learning. So my sister did a lot of my homework for me, and I cheated sometimes.
Yeah.
Just to not be in trouble to go home and have a bad grade. So I did anything to kind of keep the peace, yeah. You know, not getting into it with my mother like my sister would.
Yeah.
I'd do housework or try to stay out of her way.
Yeah.
But yeah, my sister and my mom would get into it pretty badly. Okay. Yeah.
Here's a question, and I was just thinking about it. I was reading something that I wrote to my dad earlier. Have you forgiven her?
Oh, yeah. Took me a while.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't want my mother to get cancer. She got three kinds of cancer, and I didn't wish that on her for sure. But I hated her for a long, long time. I hated her the whole time growing up. That's not okay.
Yeah.
Scared to death of her.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling like you have an enemy in the house. She was very vindictive, masochistic, would do things like cutting my hair off because I lied.
Yeah.
Mommy Dearest movie, coming upstairs and when things weren't in order, piling things out and hitting us with a garter belt till we put the stuff back. And yeah, just some really weird, weird stuff that's not okay. But, you know, getting counseling really helped me too. So, but yeah, definitely, definitely. Trying to understand someone that's bipolar, narcissistic, because I couldn't understand growing up why she didn't like me.
Yeah.
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 That bothered me a lot. Why didn't she like me?
Yeah. I can relate in a lot of ways. And
what's that? What hits you?
In the sense, like, you know, so I didn't have a great relationship with my dad, but it was different. It wasn't, he wasn't present. And for a long time, I couldn't forgive him for any of the hurt that I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth of the matter was, he didn't do a lot of things because he wasn't present. And it wasn't all his fault. But I still internalized it.
Well, you only have so much knowledge as a kid.
As a kid.
And our skills and our tools.
Man,
I wish I would have had some of the tools I have now.
Yeah.
I mean, we were trying to do our best just to find some answers. And it's really tough because we want something better to go on and we don't know how to make it happen.
Yeah. You know, I'll even add to that, as kids you don't, but I think even sometimes some of us as adults never grow out of our childhood.
Sure, I've been around a lot of people like
and don't have the tools.
Yeah, get on with life, you can't
work through it.
Yeah, so that was your start, you know, you don't have to carry that with you the whole time.
No.
And I definitely wanted to be a good parent. I answered that.
Yeah.
God helped me with that.
Yeah.
And I'm I don't even want to ask God for anything because Matthew's a good person and there's my treasure and he's living his life. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you were having Matthew, where were you at that point in your life? Were you married? Were you?
Yeah, I was married and
already
teaching,
in your teaching career.
Teaching in Fort Hood. My husband had joined the service and been stationed in Fort Hood. A lot of older teachers came out and really helped me a lot.
Yeah.
And even cautioned me that I was, when I divorced, that I was going to make Matthew and me against the world, you know, and they cautioned me that he would grow up to hate me if I did that. So they got on me a lot.
Really?
Yeah. And they said, one time they said, you can't even bring him around. You know, he's a spoiled little, you know. And so they said, you need to start doing something or you can't come around with him.
Yeah.
And so I sat down and I gulped and I said, okay, tell me what you think I need to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you were open to it.
Yeah, that made sense, and I knew what their kids were like because they had older kids, and they were all good people.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, and God's talking to me. Let me see, their kids are really nice and settled, and not big problems or anything.
Yeah.
I think I'll listen to them. Yeah, yeah. So thank God for those older teachers. Yeah, one of them, the art teacher, had me when Matthew was throwing the tantrums at age two to throw ice water in his face. And I said, oh, my gosh, no, I can't do that. That's going to mess him up psychologically. And she said, I did it to my kids. And she had a son that was an architect and a daughter that was a head nurse at a hospital, an administrator, actually. And I said, okay, if you did it, it took a lot for me to do it. I only had to do it once.
Yeah.
Next time all I had to do was bring the water in. He goes, no, Mama. The third time he did it, I said, do you want me to go get the water?
Sure you want this?
So that stopped the tantrums. But so, yeah, I mean, yeah, I've given that advice to other people. Some people don't want to follow it. But, yeah, I'm glad I had them in my life, too. And then I started living my life, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Letting him, you know, taking him and leading him into his things, his sports and stuff. But I had a life going,
That's amazing.
It was good advice, great advice. So, yeah, I believe God put these people in my path to help me.
Help me. So we just talked a little bit earlier, and I didn't know if you wanted to expound on this or not, but you talked to me about your sister and her
Committing suicide.
Yeah,
at age 60.
And
yeah, it plagued her. She never let it go.
She never let the things from the past.
No. She would write me, oh my gosh, I get these letters in the mail that were like 20 pages thick of where she would be journaling rather than getting serious counseling.
Yeah.
Journaling all this stuff to me. It would be hard to read.
It would be interesting.
And I tried to support her as much as I could, but just couldn't talk her into staying into counseling. And, and then I just got very busy with my career. But we always were talking with one another, but she's in Michigan, I'm in Texas, and, you know, she'd call me on the phone and stuff. And it was always, how are you? And then in the next breath, she had to tell me stuff that was going on. So I listened to her. Yeah. Basically was a listener for her. But I understood why she had to do it. Life was not going well for her, and she didn't see any other way out. And it really took a toll on me for 2 years. I could barely fall asleep without weeping.
After her passing?
After she committed suicide. It took me about 2 years to finally get a little bit more help and work on letting it go. And that's when I got into 12-step. So that year in 2006, I got into a 12-step program. They had a grief and loss group and stayed in that. Still do. Still go to
still
Celebrate Recovery. Great programs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there, in the recovering, was there guilt? Is that part of what it was?
No.
Just the grief of letting go.
Because I felt like I was always there for her.
Yeah.
Even being younger than her, I felt like I played the older sister.
Yeah.
I think maybe a little bit because I wasn't there and she was stuck with my parents being, you know, near enough that they could travel to see her.
Yeah.
And so she was stuck with them. So anything they gave her or did for her, she deserved it because I didn't want to be around my mother. My dad was a pretty nice person, but he just couldn't control my mother. But I liked my dad a lot. But I saw him as not standing up when we were younger. He could have stood up to her, but he worked a lot and just stayed gone. I don't blame him. But they argued all the time. It was not fun. But, yeah, no, I just kept reliving her life. Not mine, but
hers.
But hers. And so I was there all those years watching her get beat, you know, her arguing with my mother and running away and all of this. And I just couldn't let her life go because she never was able to really overcome. And she was a spiritual person.
Yeah.
It just, she wasn't much for accepting help, I think.
Yeah. And that's honestly, I think that's the toughest part sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so grateful for my community. And this is on all levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I was such a lone wolf, independent person that I didn't know how to
connect.
I didn't, not even.
Well,
not
you're
even
sure
connect.
Making up for it now.
Yeah, I'm definitely making
gosh.
Up for it. But not even Danessa connect to be able to let down my guard enough to say, I need help. And as you were just talking about that, I was where your sister was at one point. Like I told you, I'd hit my rock bottom and my therapist.
Stay away.
And with my therapist now, I love her to death. I've been with her 5 years. She is my She has been one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me.
It's great.
But the first few sessions.
Not comfortable, huh?
They were not comfortable.
No.
I didn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want the help. It was just, I had to weather the storm to get there.
Right.
And I, you know, I had a situation. Actually, I have a friend who had some tenants.
Had some what?
Tenants. He had tenants in his
house. Oh, okay. Got it.
And I went to go visit him. And I'd been through the midst of the divorce. He had three other tenants. And I think two of them and the friend had just recently gone through divorces and trying to manage.
All of them in the house with
yeah,
him living?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, it was, being in it, it was weird and tough. But I talked to one of the guys, and he didn't understand how I was being able to manage how I was. And I'll tell you, it was faith, it was running, it was my therapist, and it was my community. And I wasn't dating at the time. I haven't been dating for a while. And I knew that I didn't need to, because I needed to figure out something in me.
Right, okay.
And I had to do something different. But we were having a conversation, and he didn't I could tell that he hadn't worked through the issues with his ex-wife, but yet he was trying to find solace in other
things.
Women and other things and
yeah.
other women.
Right.
And I wish that I had more of conversations with him. But before that happened, he had ended up committing suicide.
Oh, and you haven't told me that.
Yeah. And that was even though I didn't know him on a deeply intimate level.
You knew him enough.
I knew him enough to know his story. And I wish that I, in some ways, I don't feel guilt, but I do wish that I'd been able to say more that may
had
have
made
helped
a
him.
Difference.
That
yeah.
made a difference, yeah.
But, you know, being in that head myself, because I was hospitalized for clinical depression, talked
yeah.
to you about getting
yes.
shock therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I was 35.
Yeah.
Yeah, the depressive mind is really weird. Nothing you could tell me would make a difference, really.
Yeah, but something you did tell me, and I'm talking about this, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You said shock therapy
helped me. Yeah, a lot of people think it's archaic and,
yeah.
You know, the lobotomy stuff that people used to do years back. But
yeah.
No, it really helped. It helped shock the serotonin, the dopamine, yeah. the epinephrine, it helps
yeah.
shock those cells to start communicating with one another.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun at the time because I lost my short-term memory for a while. But it didn't come back after a year, didn't come back at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a year's worth of it.
Yeah.
I just had several weeks of it. But then I got into counseling and going three times a week, driving to the hospital for therapy three times a week.
Yeah.
For 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just stayed in counseling once a week after that. So, yeah, I had to live my life over counseling.
Yeah.
And keeping my job, believe it or not.
Yeah. I remember you were telling me a story the other day about how at first people made fun of you.
Oh, talking about me behind my
back.
What
yeah.
am I doing standing in front of students teaching
yeah.
when I've had... when I was hospitalized in a psychiatric unit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I decided to close my door and make my classroom my little world and never mind what they were saying. And eventually, within a year and a half, it turned around and I was offered the counseling position.
Yeah,
because people saw me getting better.
Yeah.
And then bringing everyone, talking to me about depression.
Yeah.
You know, someone
yeah.
who's gone through the tough part of it. Then they started bringing students. They'd come.
Mm-hmm.
I'd get on the phone with their insurance company, help them set up some counseling for themselves. So, yeah, it ended up turning around to give me a huge amount of respect.
Yeah.
I was very respected.
Yeah. I honestly love hearing that story because it shows you the work that you put in, the patience that you
yeah.
have.
Oh, my gosh.
And
yeah.
not comparing yourself or being moved by what someone else says.
Yeah.
And just figuring it out within yourself, doing the work within yourself.
I hated it. I had to get away from it. What can I do? I had to put in the work.
Yeah.
My uncle, who was my godparent, also told me over the phone, he said, you keep that job no matter what. You're a
yeah.
single parent. You don't you show up to work no matter what.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was hard just even picking out my clothes for what I was going to wear that day, just showing. There's the body moving without my head. Just doing it because I knew I was responsible for Matthew.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and in some ways that helped.
Yeah.
No, I mean, absolutely. It was a burden at times, but I mean, I
but
had to.
It kept you moving.
It kept me moving.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Sure did. Yeah, yeah. I think about those times and I can get emotional about it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask, there's a couple questions that I want to ask. Since this is Courage Over Comfort, and courage is a big thing for me, what were the courageous moments in your life that you felt affected where you are now and where you're going?
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I think leaving home and not knowing anyone, I can gather people around me, choose well.
Yeah.
Because all my family's gone anyway. Mm-hmm. So I've been very blessed to pick good people, and that's definitely, I started that out when I was 16.
Yeah.
Praying to God, please help me find good people.
Yeah.
And knowing who not to be around.
Yeah.
I think that really, I think, is an answer to that because I'm still like that.
Yeah.
I left Austin to come to Georgetown and didn't know anybody here. So, yeah, I've got a beautiful group of people I hang with. Your in-laws, for one, playing Farkle a lot. And I just love our discussions that I have with them and their pets and stuff. And got to know you better that way, too.
Yeah.
So I think that really, I think, boomed me. And then, you know, having a faith.
Yeah.
Definitely. Being very blessed that my godparent wanted my parents to send my sister and me to Lutheran school.
Yeah.
So, I'm constantly in a Bible study or something.
Yeah.
And working on listening to audibles and just stuff that build my faith because, you know, it's scary if I'm in my own head too much. Yeah, so
definitely understand that.
And then I'm used to running the show. So surrendering and handing things over to a higher power, which I learned in 12-step, all those pathways that came to me and appeared to me, definitely is God having those plans for me.
I love that.
And my son has benefited from those things. He always will say, Mom, all your work that you've put in, counseling and everything that you've done, he says, I've benefited from it.
Yeah.
He appreciates it. So I would say those kinds of things.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And my last question, and it was a question I asked you when we saw each other previously. What is your purpose? And is it constantly evolving? Has it changed?
Oh,
has
I
it
love
always
this question.
Been?
Yeah. Okay. So retired teacher and counselor. So this karaoke business that I've been doing the last 6 years, going to 55 plus
communities
and also out to a restaurant and getting local people who, you know, have done music theater, you know, we get standing ovations on those people, but just bringing the joy to those people. Did an assisted living a few weeks ago, and I love telling this story about this couple. This guy was sitting with his wife, and we were actually just doing music bingo. We were doing the 1950s, and we stop and let them sing along, too. Then we help them find the song on the card, and they were singing along and so forth. This guy just had the biggest smile on his face the whole time. He was bringing me more joy, and we just love the people. We talk with them where they're from and stuff, and so he came up afterward with his wife, and he said, this meant so much to me going over these songs. He said, my wife and I had a collection of 45s, and he said, when we got married, we were broke, totally broke, but he said, we spent money we didn't have to get a 45 turntable so they could listen to their music. And I said, wow, music can mean a whole lot to us, can't they? And I said, I love that story. And he said, I love these songs because this is the collection we had.
Yeah.
And it's just, and he went left smiling. I mean, the whole time I just kept staring at him because he was having too good of a time.
Yeah.
And, but things like that, and then watching people who don't want to sing be vulnerable and end up getting up and singing, and then we can't get them to sit down. They want to. I've had to start taking our equipment down. And one lady who'd never done karaoke before, she said, "Can I still sing some more. And I said, okay, we'll leave a speaker and a mic up for you. And we were taking things down, taking things out to the car. She was still singing. I'm telling you. So, yeah. And I just saw her the other week on Music Bingo and telling her we've created a monster, karaoke monster out of her. But it brings me so much joy because it's like having a classroom again where you have some control, but you hand over a bunch to them.
Yeah.
I never wanted to guide my students too strictly.
You wanted them to be them.
Yeah. If they were misbehaving, I would just say, well, will you tell me what you think I just saw?
Yeah.
You know, rather than me getting on them, you know, or I heard that from you the first time that way. How about trying a second time and telling me something, telling me the same thing a little bit differently? So, and they never refused.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I never wanted to just boss. But this is experience like that, so I get my classroom back again.
Yeah.
So we've got 11 complexes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when you would first talk about it. And I actually haven't been to any of them.
You're going to come.
I think I'm coming on the 30th.
We're going to get you to come. Yeah.
And here's the thing. I may even sing. Actually, I think the song, I already kind of know the
practice,
song.
Practice.
I'm going to practice.
Practice.
I'm going to practice.
So you don't do cold turkey. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
but I, no, I may do cold turkey.
That's fine,
sometimes
too.
You need to do that.
Yeah.
But I think the first song I'm going to do, if you have any of these songs.
We have thousands of them.
It'll have to be a Stevie Wonder song.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Oh, it'd have to be a Stevie Wonder song.
Oh, yeah, we have him like crazy.
Good,
we have Motown. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when I first heard about it, and I'll just tell you about it, I think there was the nerves. I was like, I'm not doing that. That's not something that I would do. But I'm so in a space in my life right now that I'm like, no, I do it. Even if you feel stupid, even if you feel silly.
Exactly. Because people understand it. They're so understanding.
We're all there. Yeah.
That they'll applaud you even if you're horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they'll applaud you.
But to see how you've grown it.
I know it.
It's amazing. And that's what happens, I think, when you live in your purpose. The things will come. The people will come. And that's what I'm seeing.
And
with
it's
that.
A lot of work. I mean, we have wagons full of equipment.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm 76. I've got some arthritis here. It's tough. So we have to pay someone to kind of help us load and unload the equipment. And it is a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it is totally worth it. I have
to
come home the next day if we're not performing the next day and just kind of totally unwind. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even put the equipment away for a day or two because it's just, wore me out. Yeah.
I love it.
We do dancing too. So we
do you
play
really?
Dance.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. We play dance songs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And people will get up with canes, with walkers, with wheelchairs and get out on dance. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we have a friend that passed away in May. Roger.
Yes, Roger. Yeah.
And I got to see that part, which is really, really cool. Like being able to.
He and I presented a lesson together.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah. And amazing lesson. And so I love that you're doing this because it's things like that that was important to him, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was good to be able to tell about his life and how it connected with the lesson we were trying to teach. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was amazed the stuff he did with high school bands and just an amazing.
He was a talented man.
Very talented.
Talented. But anyway, that is our time.
All right.
I'm Ron Aladdin-Nee. I'm here with my amazing, amazing friend, Martha Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And this was Courage Over Comfort. And I just want to say, thank you for telling
your
story.
Thank you so much. I just really enjoyed this and glad it just, you know, just navigated the way it needed to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we're out. Peace.
Okay.